This time in the Magic Kitchen, we're joined by Emma Catherine, author of Season Songs.
I'm Leander Witchwood.
And I'm Elise Wells.
And welcome to the Magic Kitchen podcast, where we talk about magic, kitchen witchcraft, herbs,
and everything in between.
The Magic Kitchen podcast is fully and independently funded by the Witchwood Tea House. So show us some support and head over to thewitchwoodteahouse.com to purchase some deliciously hand-blended loose leaf teas or one of my other botanical products. As a special thank you for your support, please use POD15 at checkout to take 15% off of your next order. So without any further ado, let's get to the episode. Blessed be. My gosh. So we are in full spring swing.
Yes. I feel like
things are so busy. Mm-hmm. We have so much going on.
We're coming out of that side of the lunar eclipse, and we're in that liminal space between the coming solar eclipse, which we were talking about it. I think it does start the first week of April. So it's going to be a weird week. And like we have been facing technology issues, and I feel like you mentioned the solar flares, and I think that might be related. Because there's also...
I think there's just so much happening.
Yeah, there's just astrologically a lot happening. And then literally, there's a lot happening. Like, there's just a lot of turmoil.
Yeah, and what...
in the human species right now.
Mercury retrograde happening. I feel like we're getting ready to be turned upside down. So buckle in.
And we got spoiled because we started this year with no planets in any retrograde. And I think that got us in a false sense of security. Like, I know that my moods were more stable. Like, just the flows I go through have been easier and more manageable. Easier. So, I'm buckling in.
Spicing up now.
And you know what, though? That's actually a good lesson. I think that's the beauty of being a witch is we are in tune with those cycles and we do have the warning. You know, feel for those muggles out there, you know, like the ones who don't have any idea and they're just waking up really irritable and they don't know why and their phone isn't loading and they don't know why, you know, like we at least have that why. And I think that makes it easier.
Agreed.
And next weekend is an opportunity to really learn about some protection magic and energy work in
April
the next,
2nd through the 4th.
Yep. In the Shield and Spell Summit. April 2nd through the 4th, both Leandra and I are presenting there. And alongside, I think there's now 15 teachers total. So 13
some
others.
Really cool people.
Evo Dominguez Jr., a lot of guests from our show, actually.
Yes.
But we did not organize this summit. People have been messaging me like, thanks for putting this together. I'm like, no. This is Wendy Mata. She has been on our show. Yes. Y'all know her. She is a bruja curandera. And when we had her on, I couldn't say that well, and I've been working on it, so I had to get that in there.
I have to. gotta be respectful, so say it right.
Yeah, exactly. And she is just a dear. Like, she embodies so much of what we believe, which is collaboration is the key to growth for our paths.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's in the student-teacher relationship, in the equals relationship, in group learning, in removed digital learning, in self-paced learning, you know, it's that collaboration that helps us grow.
Yeah.
And Wendy and her Bruja school really emulate that. And
yeah, they do.
I love being a part of what they do.
Yeah, it's so much fun. And she's got such great energy. I just love her laugh and her smile. She's always, always able to, like, I don't know, not ignite, but just energize my energy when I'm, you know, not feeling so... I don't know. I don't have any battery power.
Yeah.
Like today, like my battery power is low today.
Yeah. So the Shield and Spell Summit is an opportunity to learn from, like I said, like 15 of us. And we're all teaching very different realms of
Yes.
Of protection work. So my course is on working with land spirits for protection. And this is something I've taught about in different realms, but never in its own course. So this will be the first time I've put together a course specifically on protection work with land spirits. And we also talk about connecting to specific sacred sites for land spirit work in order to protect your energy. So it's going to be a really good course. I'm excited.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and I'm teaching plant allies and using plants in protection wards, shields, and that sort of thing. So we're going to talk about how to establish allies with alliances with plants, how to use them specific ways. I'm going to demonstrate one of my recipes so that you can take it and learn from it. And yeah, I think like this is, I was looking at some of the headliners and what they're teaching. I'm like, oh, I just want to sit on this for 3 days and do this. Like mm-hmm. if I can get away with it and still get my work done, I'm there.
mm-hmm. I know. Well, and it's types of protection magic that I don't know. Like there's a couple presentations that are coming from schools of theory and teaching that summits like this are the only opportunity to really dip your toes into, you know, right. like Evo, his course is about using your power, your energy, like harnessing that in order to build protection. And
yeah,
he's one of the elders of our craft. He's been in the craft. Do you remember what year? I know in the 1970s, like literally we're talking almost 50 years that he has been involved in the community. So the techniques he's going to use to teach that, even though that's something that you and I both do, are going to be different because he's coming from a different school, a different background, and a really deeply rooted craft. And then, you know, Tanae Stewart's going to be there. Aunt Carla's going to be there. Hannah, the suburban witch, is going to be there. So we've got every continent, every culture represented. It's going to be so good. I'm super excited about this lineup.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah, I can't wait for it.
And it's completely free. So if you didn't get your tickets, the link is in the show notes. And it's completely free. There are upgrades. So if you choose to have access to the workbooks and the bonuses, we both have some extra bonuses that are part of that bundle. Mm-hmm. So definitely a great offering that we're proud to be a part of.
I will tell you what I'm up to, because for some reason I decided to do everything. So I am now offering monthly women's circles at the Serpent Key in Hanover. We just finished our primordial circle, which was phenomenal. I blended a tea specifically for this circle, and it was wonderful. And the next one is the Medicine Woman, where we're going to dig into plant allies and healing ourselves with plants and the earth and energy work and somatic practices and that sort of thing. And then I have my own summit coming up, my own workshop, a day-long workshop coming up the end of April. It's on energy mastery. And that one is going to be a full day of lessons that I drip out to you. And then we're going to do a live ritual at the end. So if you want to get on board with any of this, like join my mailing list. You can find the link either in the show notes, or if you go to leandrawitchwood.com, you can find all the stuff there. And yeah, so Shield and Spell, Medicine Woman, Energy Mastery. This is going to be a packed April, and I'm excited.
Yeah. Oh, that does sound really good. And actually, in my community for April, I almost forgot to mention this, we're doing something very different. Usually, we are doing rituals for the full moon, and then another ritual for the new moon, and then a ritual for Beltane. This month, I got a download, and it started really beautifully. It happened where I was sitting at my computer and I was thinking about April. And that morning I had been thinking of my grandmother a lot, and she's not a spirit guide in the traditional sense, but she's very present in my world as a spiritual guide. And I was thinking about her. I saw some butterflies, which are her symbol and her sign to me that she's with me. And I'm sitting at my computer and I hear very clearly flower magic. And it's in her voice, but I didn't even register it as her. I turned to my husband. We both work in the same office at home. And I said, did you hear that? And he's like, hear what? I said, I think there's people talking on the street. Like, I literally didn't want to know it was spiritual. I was like, I think someone's talking on the speech. This is something about flowers. He's like, no, no. Mm. He didn't have headphones in, you know? And then I saw another butterfly. I look out the window and I saw another butterfly. And that's when I allowed myself to accept what my first instinct was, that yes. was her guidance. And as I accept it, in that second, I get this full download for a full month of activities focusing on flowers, wonderful. Bringing them in as our flower teachers, which is something really deep in the eclectic fairy tradition I'm a priestess of. Yes. And so we are building regular weekly practice to build together to one big flower message, essentially. So this month is really, nice. Really a beautiful way of working with the seasons where you live and connecting to flowers and their message of growth and expansion and standing out and being beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's powerful. It's really powerful. I mean, this is the most channeled month of work I've ever put together. So
I love it. I loved channeled work.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it comes through. Like my writing, my books especially are like, that's where the magic happens, you know, like we talked about with Astrea Taylor about it, creativity mm-hmm. magic, like that zone is where that comes.
There so, it is.
Yeah. It was fun. Gotcha. It was fun to write this. Yeah. Looking forward to April.
In the Rebel Mystic community. Yeah, April's going to be so much fun. Like we're in Rebel Mystic community. We're working on travel spell kits. So I'm going to work with in our mentoring session on the 11th. And we're going to talk about creating your own little travel spell kit. This wasn't a download. It was more of just a realization. I was getting ready to go on a trip and I didn't have spell components with me. And I was like, oh, where's my travel kit? And I realized like it was this massive box that couldn't travel with me. So I'm like, oh, okay, I'm gonna make my own. Well, why didn't I share this with the community? So that's what we're focusing on in the community this month. And our mentoring on the 11th, we're gonna talk about travel spell kits and like some of the basic things you can put into there. And then I'm curating a kit for our ritual on the 25th that comes with the membership. So yeah, April is crazy busy.
Nice. Yeah.
It's exciting.
Emma Catherine is a staff writer at Which Way Magazine, the House of Twigs blog, Stone, Root, and Bone blog, the Spiral Nature blog, and Gods and Radicals. She hosts Wild Witch Podcast and has spoken at several UK pagan events, including Magical Women Conference in London. Visit her online at emmacatherinewildwitchcraft.com. So it's great to have you here, a fellow Which Way magazine writer.
Yeah, welcome.
And you're like me in a lot of ways, so I'm excited to have you here because, okay, we both write for a million places. So we got that going for us. And then we both... Yeah, it's the way to do it. And then we both have land spirits as at the core of our practices. Yes. So I'm really excited to get into that with you.
Oh, I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me because I can literally talk the back legs off a donkey about this stuff. So.
Awesome.
So let's start with that question. In your words, what is a land spirit?
You know, I think that there's several connotations when we think of the land, and some of them can be quite negative. And when we think about the movement of peoples and, you know, all of the things that go into that. So for me, the idea of a land spirit is that it doesn't matter where we are in the world. It's something that we can connect to inherent with the land. And it's different things for different people. I've found in my own experience, you know, just talking to people generally, for me, a land spirit is any spirit that is tied to the land. So I was recently talking about duppies. So I'm biracial. So my dad is Jamaican. He was born in Jamaica. And duppies are usually angry type of spirits. And they're usually people, but they become tied to the land because of whatever reason. And so it's quite a complex idea about what a land spirit is. But for me, that's fun because then it means that people get to explore that in their own way, in a way that means something to them. So for me, a land spirit is, it can be an animal, plant, tree. Like I say, sometimes it can be complicated to really pin down what they are, or do you know what I mean? So it's lots of different things, which for me makes it exciting.
And you share a bit in the book. So of course we won't share any spoilers here, but you know, you've always really had a strong connection to the land. So how did you get the idea for this book?
Well, I published Witch Life with Llewellyn, you know, in, oh gosh, was it 2020 or 2021? All the years like after COVID seem to merge into one another, don't they? So I published it back then, and you know, I was thinking about my next book and what I wanted it to be. And Witch Life was very practical. It was about, you know, getting to grips with knowledge firsthand to kind of assimilate those experiences. Because I, like, in my day job, I work in a special school, and it's autism specific. And, you know, the way we educate children, I think it'd benefit everyone, like adults, mainstream kids, everybody, because it really builds on their individual skills and all of that kind of thing. And for me, you only learn that with experience. So I wanted Witch Life to be very practical. But then I also wanted to, it's hard to fit like everything into one book when you're a writer. You have so many ideas, it's kind of hard to know when to stop or what to include in what. So I wanted Season Songs to be something that was kind of personal, that shared my own experiences, but also kind of gave people something to think about and to kind of begin to work with the land in a way that works for them. So that was kind of where the idea of the book started. And I guess it's kind of the weird way around of doing it, like a practical book and then maybe a theory book. I wouldn't really class it as a theory book because there's lots of practical stuff in there as well. But there is, I would say, more theory stuff. And, you know, we go talk about lots of different things. But I think once you've got some practical experience under your belt, it's kind of easier then to maybe explore different themes because you've got something on which to base it, something based on your own experiences and your own reality. So I think I wanted to kind of go with that kind of idea, you know.
That makes sense. Yeah. And yeah, like you said, it's so hard. Well, and there's so many topics in this stratosphere of land spirits and, you know, ritual and connecting and witchcraft in general, that it's hard to nail down one subject and just stick with it.
Oh, it really is. The struggle is real.
So in your lineage of working with land spirits, when did you first start connecting with them? When did you first start working with them or recognizing what they were?
I don't know. There was always a sense that there was something different about it. And I think when you're a kid, there's a period of you're just enjoying experiences. But then as you get, I don't know, I guess it's normal for most kids that as you begin to kind of assimilate those experiences, you then begin to question things a little bit more, you kind of sense things a little bit more differently, and the way that mixes with your expanding cognitive, you know, abilities. I think you just have it's a special time. So I always had the sense that there was something special about it, but I guess something clicked maybe around 8, 9, 10, but I guess I didn't know what it was called then, you know. And it's only later on with later experience when you're learning more about witchcraft and all of that kind of stuff that you can begin to think, oh yes, that was what it was, you know. And but I think most children around that age, 8, 9, 10, when you're beginning to explore the world and beginning to do so a little bit more independently from your parents, I think that's a really special time when, you know, I think kids are just more aware of things around them at that time.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, and I know my kids growing up, I always gave them ample time to go out and just be in nature. And I don't think enough children have that anymore, because we're so urbanized that it's hard to, you know, just send your kids out to play without, you know, this, some danger being involved. So, yeah, but the division, like becoming aware of these are not necessarily people we're experiencing. I think that is such a profound experience for kids and adults when we start really getting into that realm.
Yes, it's nice to rediscover it as adults, because I think it's, well, at least for me, there was that natural moving away from those experiences when you hit those kind of teenage years and you're more influenced by, you know, you just want to fit in and be normal for a little while at least, and you know, you're influenced by your peers and all the fun things that teenagers do.
Yeah.
So you kind of move away from that, and I think at the same time you're beginning to kind of gain that adult logic that wants to explain everything. And sometimes if you don't have the language to explain it, it's easy to kind of push it aside or maybe think, do you know what, maybe I'm just being a bit daft or a bit silly. And then when you rediscover that as an adult kind of learning about witchcraft, it's such a nice feeling to be able to say, actually, you know, I've had these experiences. What does that mean now? How can I kind of recapture them? And I think, it's just such a fun time.
Yeah. Well, and I totally relate to actually being able to play out in the wilderness as a kid. I was really fortunate where I grew up that I also had, like you described, like some woods that I could explore.
Yeah.
And I remember laying at the edge of the woods where I could watch the birds come out and fly and come back. And I remember trying to connect to these hordes of birds in the sky and like guess, okay, there's going to be 37 of them this time. And then I try to count them. And of course, I can't count 37 that fast, but I would be like, okay, I was right. I was right. It was 37. Or I would be like trying to learn. I remember like in preschool, I was learning how to read and I was like looking for the letters in the birds. Like just those ways of intimately, like the land was part of my growth journey so innately. Nobody taught me how to do that. That like you said, when you get that rediscovering as an adult, and I learned the term land spirits and I learned that there was something to that. It wasn't a one-sided imagination on my part. That changed my witchcraft. You know, I'd already been practicing for several years when I came across the term land spirits, but that was it for me. You know, I wasn't as interested in other aspects.
And for me, it was really a way of kind of balancing the different parts of myself, like heritage-wise, because I'm biracial. So like I said, my mum is white English, my dad is Jamaican. And for a long time, I just focused on kind of the British side. Or then when I kind of, it was like a pendulum effect. So whichever one I was kind of concentrating on, there was always a sense that I was leaving something else behind. So actually, when I learned about land spirit, it was really a way of bridging the divide between those two different parts of myself. And again, I'd been practicing for quite a while when I first came across that term. And it's right. It's like something just clicks and you think, And so for me, it was really a way of bridging the divide between those different practices of like British traditional witchcraft, like the more folk side and the Obeah side. So it was quite profound for me as well. But I was also a latch door kid, which like my parents worked a lot. And like, I grew up in the 80s and 90s in the UK. Like, and I don't call myself Northern, I'm in the Midlands. So if a Londoner was like talking about me, I'd be Northern. But if a Yorkshire person was talking about me, I wouldn't be. So we're kind of in the middle. And both my parents worked. And back then it was quite normal to leave the oldest kid in charge throughout the day. So my oldest sister, because there were four of us all together, my oldest sister often was tasked with babysitting us. But of course, she wanted to be out with her mates as well. So out we all went. And it's great. You kind of wince at some of the things you got up to. But it was, you know, it was fun times. And people don't live like that anymore, you know. So there is a sense of how to kind of rediscover that. I think, that's quite important for me, how to kind of rediscover that and enjoy it. But it was great living like that really as a kid.
Yeah, I grew up during the same era. And the things that would come on at night at 10 o'clock at night, letting parents know that they have children, they should probably know where they are, you know?
Yeah.
Those types of things. Yeah, there's definitely some, you know, questionable spaces we got ourselves into.
Real talk. Leandro and I could be trying to sell you socks or a VPN or that cereal everybody talks about, but we like to keep it witchy around here instead. And we can only do that because of the support of listeners like you. When you're joining my magical living community on Patreon, you're not only getting weekly shadow work journal prompts, new moon and full moon rituals, exclusive videos, exclusive meditations, plus bonus episodes of the Magic Kitchen podcast, but you're seriously keeping the lights on in the Magic Kitchen. Thank you for listening and reviewing the show. And if you're ready to meet me in the Magic Kitchen, pop over to patreon.com/EliseWells and start your free trial. Let's deepen your magical practice together.
So do you get this question a lot? I actually get this in my workshops on land spirit work a lot. How do I know if it's a land spirit or a ghost or a deity? So how do you, or do you, differentiate between those things?
I guess it depends. I guess it depends on people's definitions of what they're using. So, for example, in my Abir practice, you know, we work with a spirit called Sasa Bonsan, but he is a land spirit. Some people might describe him as a deity. I don't, but some people might. So I guess it depends. For me, he's very much rooted in the land, is very much a wild spirit, a protector of the wild and all of that kind of stuff. And I guess this is like the part of the journey and part of the experience of, you know, just kind of allowing yourself to experience things. And because sometimes it is difficult to know. And when you begin to work with that spirit, when you begin to kind of connect with the land, I think it becomes easier to kind of distinguish. Because for me, land spirits and working with land spirits means that we are inherently connected to a place, or, you know, a particular space. For me, in my everyday world, I spend every day like in the garden at some point, you know, even in the winter, because I'm quite lucky where I live. I've got quite a large garden with like lots of mature trees and shrubs and, you know, lots of wildlife, so it's quite nice. So, you know, because that's really rooted in the land, you then begin to become familiar with the spirits that are in that land and associated with it. And I guess it's just a case of building relationship and discovering where that goes. I think when we think about relationships with spirits and deities and things, we tend to overcomplicate them. And I think that we should draw on our human knowledge. It's a relationship. It's a two-way street. You know, it's about spending that time, getting to know them. But then when you begin to kind of maybe understand, get a feel for their rhythms, begin to kind of learn their secrets and what they want to share, it just takes time. But I guess it's knowing your space, connecting to a space. And I think sometimes there's the urge to kind of want to rush that. I get it, because it's like, great, you know, who doesn't? But I think taking the time to really get to know a particular space is really important, and to just allow yourself to experience it. I often tell people, like, just get a journal, because these things become your working grimoires, don't they? You know, and just to document everything to go back over later on to kind of compare experiences. Yeah, so it does take time. There's no quick fix, but I think it's just part of the journey and should be enjoyed.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, is that we're too focused in our modern culture on quick, fast, instant. And we forget that a lot of these relationships with deities, land spirits, ghosts, whatever entity you're trying to connect with, it takes time. It takes that development of trust, just like you would if you met somebody in a bar. You're not going to like instantly jump in their car and go, I hope not. You know, you want to get to know this person first to make sure that their energy is good and that they're a decent person. They're not going to harm you or mislead you or anything like that. And I know a lot of people have that question, like, how do I know it's just not a spirit trying to mislead me? How do I know this? How do I know that? But yeah, if you have that relationship with your land, you're going to instantly know if it's a new entity or if it's one that's been there for a while. And that's a pretty good distinguisher of what you're working with. So yeah. The relationship.
I think working with the land, when you first start, it can be quite an eerie experience, just even experiencing just the reality of the land. So I can remember like the first time going to the woods on my own as an adult. It's a weird feeling because you're so aware of all of the possible dangers, you know, especially as a woman being on your own, you know, there's all of that kind of stuff that comes into it as well. So you become really aware of possible dangers and all of that stuff that feeds into kind of that disconnect with the land. So you might avoid certain spaces that you think are quite creepy or lonely or, you know, all of those things that people tend to worry about. So when the first time experiencing the land just as it is, without any kind of mystical or witchy woo about it, it can even just be so daunting on its own. So it's important to kind of get to know the land as it is in our very mundane kind of way, you know, especially like going to the woods at night time. It's so weird, even for people who are used to it, you know. A few years ago, I had some friends and we camped in a local wood, and my sister and a close friend came, and you know, they like nature and stuff, maybe not at night time in the woods. And people are just so afraid of normal noises, so hunting animals or, you know, foxes or whatever it is. And it is eerie, it's dark, it's so dark, you're away from, you know, you don't realize how much light it is even in a small street or whatever. So there's a lot of things that you have to overcome even just before you even begin to look at the witchy side of it and even begin to look at the spirit side. You have to kind of allow your mundane mind to get used to those before you can then move on to work with any kind of spirit, because it's just a learning curve and getting to know the land.
Definitely. Yeah, I remember we would go on moonlight hikes, and it wasn't like, you know, anything dangerous. It was pretty much a flat trail. And I remember like at first the instant, like, oh my God, what's in the bushes, you know? But when you relax into it and you let your eyes adjust to the light, you let yourself just adjust to the surroundings and know your footing, it's actually pretty amazing. Like I that's one of my favorite things to do is a moonlight hike.
Oh, that sounds amazing. I always think it's worth going with people who like are interested in that, because sometimes if you're with a group and it's, you know, they get quite excited. My sister will probably kill me for telling this story, but I've got three other sisters, and two of them are also into witchy stuff. So we went to the woods one night, and it was pitch black, and I'm very clumsy, so I put my torch on my phone.
Oh,
and my sister's like, oh my God, Emma, turn it off. The murderers will see us. Oh, I'm like, there's no murderers. We are the only ones here.
Right.
So I always think, go with people who have the same kind of energy, who are also interested, and, you know, if you're kind of worried about going alone.
You definitely need that presence, that like grounding presence to bring you back to the reality of you're okay.
And I always say too, like, if you have that relationship with the land, like if you go to your moonlit hike in the same place every time, or if you've been to that place during the day before you've gone at night, it can really help to feel more protected. Like the land is expecting you. So the land is going to give you some insight or some heads up if something creepy is going on. Like that's happened to me before in small ways. You know, it's, a tree has never like shaken its leaves, like arms in the air, like, hey, don't turn left. But, you know, there's been times, one time in particular, I went alone to a new hiking area in Baltimore, where I used to live. And Baltimore is not known for its lovely, safe nature walks. But there's one area, and I'll say the name of it, and all the listeners from Baltimore will be like, Elise, you did what? So I went to Leakin Park alone. And it used to be in a state of like some rich folks. And, you know, that house is now either a museum or actually just business like offices. Yeah. But you can walk through the land there, and there's some woods and a creek and there's some trails. And they even do like local sort of art installations on the trail, but they're not like traditional art. Like they're made with leaves and wood. So they're really beautiful. So it's a nice walk. So I'm doing this walk, and all of a sudden, the wind picks up, a shadow comes down, and it's like, the land is like, do not, just don't go there. So I turn around, I go back to my car, and I call it a day, but I had a nice day.
Yeah.
But I posted on our Facebook group for Baltimore Witches and was like, hey, ladies, you know, I had a really nice walk today. I went to this place, and they were like, did you go past this point of the trail? Because that's where they find the dead bodies. That's like dumping ground. Yeah. So the land like turned me around and was like, get your ass back. Man. And I did.
Wow.
I listened. I didn't know why, but I knew I should listen.
You knew you shouldn't go forward.
Yeah. Like, wow.
So that's one of my favorite memories of the land liked me enough to say, look, there's nothing for you beyond this point.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's hard to know that as well. It kind of hurts a little bit, doesn't it? Until you get used to trusting why.
Yeah.
You know, you think, oh, I want it to welcome me. But then, you know, you learn later on that. But again, it's that trusting. You have to build that relationship and kind of build that trust.
Yeah.
I think
and,
it all comes
from that. And definitely, and it's hard to trust people. The signs.
Yes, listen to them.
Hey there, witches. Did you know that there's an entire community out there dedicated to you and your journey? The Rebel Mystic community is a space where I offer my decades of knowledge and experience to witches just like you. I do this through live events, monthly mentoring, monthly rituals, a book club, and other resources like workbook pages and meditations. There is even a complete self-paced course library you can access. Check the link in the show notes to learn more about this community and how to become a member. Blessed be.
So along the topic of connecting with them and listening to these land spirits, how important do you think it is to have and work with land spirits as part of a magical practice as a witch?
I think it is extremely important. I mean, obviously I'm biased, but I think even if you are not really into animism or you don't think you are, I think it's really important. There's so much witchcraft and lore that is from the land. You know, if you think about sympathetic magic, so using thorns or, you know, vines to in witchcraft, using any natural material coming from the land, why are you using it if there's if there's nothing inherently spiritual about it? So for me, it's an intrinsic part. And, you know, I don't think you have to go the whole hog and, you know, be all, oh, I'm an animist or whatever. I think you will in the end, because it's just a natural progression. However, I think that it can only really improve your witchcraft practice, really. It just can make it, you're working stronger. There's no end to the benefit for witches. But I would say that I'm kind of biased. But
I would have to agree.
And people often like differentiate themselves and they're like, I'm a green witch. And it's like, well, your witchcraft will eventually touch on the green things if you're doing it right. You know, like unless you're, I guess you could really only work with crystals, but even crystals, where do they come from again? Oh yeah. The earth. So you're always getting back to this animus perspective, you know, like if somebody believes crystals work, they're believing in animism.
Yeah, 100%. And I always urge people to, because I think sometimes people are put off by a specific label. And I always urge people to kind of explore what that means. Don't get caught up in labels. It's easy to do so because you're right, people kind of have different names for what they do. When, you know, most people I know who practice witchcraft, it delves into so many different areas. But for me, there is always an element of animism there. There is always an element of working with spirit, whatever that spirit is, you know. And yeah, it's massively underrated, I think, as a witchcraft. I don't want to say tool, but, you know, as something to explore more deeply in your witchcraft practice. I think, I don't know why that is. I guess people are so busy, it's kind of hard to kind of learn. There's so much out there. It's hard to kind of know where to start, I guess.
And I think it has to do with people are starting on the internet now. And when you start on the internet, you have to have something to type in. And I think those keywords, I actually was just talking to somebody today about the baby witch term. And she's like, I don't like this term because it kind of belittles us from thinking like you have to grow in your power before you can call yourself a proper witch. Whereas like, you know, you're a witch the minute you decide to be. And I was like, yeah, I agree. And then we ended up talking about how, well, why do we have to keep using it? And it's because if somebody's a newer witch and they type that in, you want them to find your helpful information, you know? So these words become meaningless once we've done what they're meant to do, which is found what we need to find.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. That makes sense. Because I think you're right. People don't necessarily know what it is. And I think even the term land spirit, if you're not used to being in nature and you're not used to having those experiences, even that might seem off-putting or daunting, especially if you live in like a city. So I live in a town. It's a rural town, so I can go for a walk from my home and 10 minutes in any direction, you know, there's a river or there's a woods or there's a field or there's something. But if you live in a city area where you don't have that and you're hearing land spirits, this and land spirits, that's, it's easy to think, you know, this doesn't apply to me, because I think the idea of the wild wood has been over-romanticized. So we kind of think that unless we're doing the big things, they're not worth doing. I couldn't disagree with that more. And for me, it's important that people kind of find the magic that they can do, even if it's for 5 minutes a day. Because my belief is you start for 5 minutes a day and it's natural that you want to do it for longer and more. And the more you kind of make that time for yourself, the easier it gets. For me, it's knowing where to start is the difficult thing, because sometimes the labels have different connotations for different people. Yeah. And it's about maybe just beginning to explore past that and just kind of being a little bit more open-minded.
Yeah. And don't let those big acts or the thinking that you have to only do big acts to stop you.
Yeah.
Like you said, the small things every day, you just take 5 minutes to drop in and be present with your energy. That's enough. You know, you don't have to, you know, call upon the elements and summon thunder and lightning and
no, as fun as all of that is, and as much as I would love to do that every day, you know, sometimes real life gets in the way. And I just think, you know, doing those small acts, you kind of realize there is almost something special in doing something so small. There's something special in the ordinariness of stuff, you know.
Sure.
I can remember like being at school and we were in English class, and it's going to bug me to death because I can't remember the name of this poet, but it was a poem. And at the time I thought, do you know what? This is so random, because it was about his mum or his grandma or someone peeling potatoes, you know. It was such a random poem. And I was like, why are we even learning this? But then later on, you kind of realise that it's talking about a special moment that was special to him as a child for whatever reason. And it wasn't really the act of the peeling of the potatoes. It was that time spent with someone so special. So you know, being able to kind of change your perspective and see the magic in the ordinary and realize that actually witchcraft is there to help us in our everyday lives. So how can you begin to incorporate that in? For me, that goes hand in hand with exploring the land, because, you know, why wouldn't you?
So you use the term Obeah to describe your practice. What is Obeah for our listeners who may not have heard of it?
It kind of depends who I'm talking to. The quick definition is, I often say it's an Afro-Caribbean magical and spiritual practice and tradition. If I was being really lazy, I might just call it Jamaican witchcraft. But it is an African spiritual and magical tradition. It has its origins in West Africa. But I think the Caribbean has a particular and bloody history that is so separate from like the States and the UK. It had its own kind of energies and traumas around that. So when the enslaved brought their beliefs with them, it kind of mixed, you know, because you have to kind of look at the history of the Caribbean, you know, and the plantation. So you'd have lots of different enslaved people from lots of different places, because but for the plantation owners and the, you know, the slavers, for them, they would want to minimize any kind of uprising. So they would mix different peoples from different places, from different tribes, who would perhaps have different languages, different beliefs. Even if they had similar beliefs, there's lots of variation between, you know, different peoples. And so you'd have a right mix. And then thrown into that as well, you'd have the indigenous of those islands. So the Taino, the Arawak, the Carib Indians, you know, you've got all of those peoples, all of the bloody kind of traumatic, awful kind of bloodshed that went on. And so I think whenever that happens in human history, things shift and change. So the Obeah from its origins becomes simply different, because the people who are practicing it, their lives have changed so dramatically that it has, their magical and spiritual beliefs have to change as well in order to suit them. And I often kind of draw parallels with Haitian voodoo in this, because in Vodun you have the different kind of classes of spirits. So you have the Petro, who are kind of fiery and hot and sometimes described as the lovers of the newer worlds. And you have like the Radas. There's lots of different kinds of spirits, but they're the main two that most people are aware of. And the Rada, who are kind of seen as the more original forms, the cooler forms. And you see this split because, you know, as the history of the people and the lives of the people who practiced and believed changed so radically, their beliefs had to as well. You know, their spirits then became something that would aid and abet them as, you know, they were fighting injustice and oppression and slavery and, you know, the right to rule themselves. They needed lower spirits who were more fiery and who, you know, would be more suited to kind of that kind of atmosphere. And I think you see it doesn't matter what people you're looking at, wherever you see that kind of really dramatic kind of energy, you always see a shift, you know, something changes, it becomes different and it becomes something new. So, because my family are from Jamaica, I often call it Jamaican witchcraft. But if I was being quite specific, I'd say it was, you know, a Afro-Caribbean spiritual and magical tradition. But there are so many parallels between the two for me, because on my British side, I practice kind of more folk traditions, British witchcraft. And so there's both rooted in the land, both rooted with working with the spirits of where you are, all of that kind of stuff. So for me, they fit quite nicely together. There's lots of parallels that just make sense.
Yeah, I completely relate to that. My dad is Greek Egyptian and my mom is Virginian, like white bread American. So I also had that sort of like aha moment when land spirits came into it for me, because that's the uniting factor. Like where I'm at is where I'm at. So that's non-negotiable. That's something relatable. And I don't feel like I'm leaving anything behind from either side of my practices. And even my coven background, the coven I'm initiated in is more Celtic based. So that's even, you know, stirring the pot even more. So when I can bring folk practices that do have so much overlap, there is so much overlap. I was talking to an Appalachian practitioner, which isn't too far off from my ancestry with my mother, but, you know, still not quite what I'm trained in. But so many of the beliefs they have around certain foods and why to incorporate them in kitchen magic are identical to the Egyptian practices my grandmother taught me. And that's just amazing. You know, like, it's, these people didn't know each other, you know? So it just speaks so much to this animism, and to me brings it back to the land spirits.
Yeah. And how they teach us. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I think as well, it just highlights the connection between humans and the land, you know, wherever we are in the world, you know, it's quite nice, isn't it? It's kind of special.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you alluded to this a little bit, but where do land spirits fall in Obeah generally, and for you? But, you know, like, are they part of Obeah normally as well?
Yes. Yeah. In many different ways, practical and spiritual. And I always like to talk about Nanny of the Maroons when I talk about this, because for me, like, her story really highlights the nature of getting to know the land and using it, and not just using it, but having that relationship where the land wants to protect you as well. So Nanny of the Maroons is a national hero in Jamaica. And she was an enslaved woman from Ghana. She was an enslaved Ghanaian, and she was brought to Jamaica with some members of her family, I think brothers, and I'm not sure about parents, but definitely at least two of her brothers. Anyway, she was an Obeah woman, and she is very much credited with defeating the British army and winning freedom for her people. So the Westward Maroons in Jamaica, in like the mountains. And she's very much credited with doing that through the power of Obeah. But in order to do that, she had to use her knowledge of the land. And this is where I kind of highlight how practices can transform and change, but at their core are still, you know, there's still that essence of them. Because, you know, she was from Ghana, so the Obeah that she grew up with and that she was taught was probably very different from the form that she used to kind of fight the British. She knew what plants to use to heal, to hide. Her camouflage, you know, is legendary. And you've got to remember that back then the British army were like, you know, they were well equipped, they were well armed, they were well fed, they outnumbered the Maroons. But it was Nanny's knowledge of the land, knowing where to fight them, using the knowledge that she had of, you know, and for me there's an element of the land also aiding them, you know, because for me there's so many parallels between her story and the colonization of land, you know, so there's so many different layers. So I always like to kind of use her story to highlight, you know, how animism and land spirits are kind of used in Obeah, you know, albeit to the extreme end, you know, but at the very least it shows that she would have had to have such an in-depth knowledge of that land and then, you know, a really strong connection with it, because of this, they were such massive underdogs, you know. It's unreal, really.
Yeah, and it brings to at least the question to my mind, like, well, how much did the land guide her in that? You know, yeah. if you're working with land spirits, just like we were talking about, the, you know, the walking down the trail with the dead bodies, like the land is going to let you know if you have that relationship, yeah, what, you know, what to be aware of and what turns to take, or, you know, if the high ground's going to work, or I don't know, like, I just feel like the land speaks back to us so prevalently if we connect with it.
Absolutely. And I think because I've given talks about her and I write about her a lot, I'm a bit of a fangirl. one of the things that often becomes clear is actually, you know, the fear that she inspired in the British Army. And when you look at it, you know, and you think about those soldiers who were probably there against their will anyway, it was, you know, and being in such a foreign land like the Jamaican bush, the Jamaican jungle, how different it would have been from anything they would have ever known at nighttime, you know. In lots of ways, it was the land that defeated them.
Yeah.
You know, they were unprepared for that mountain guerrilla warfare, massively so. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, it definitely brings to mind the land and people working together.
Yeah. Absolutely. Amazing. So,
yeah, that's so powerful.
Yeah. And I, you know, I've, in my research in herbalism and, you know, land spirits and stuff like that, we have I don't know if it goes down too far, but we have something called Jimson weed, and it is also nicknamed Jamestown weed because of the effect it had on the British armies coming over, because they started eating it and then, you know, tripping for days, and they
grow that in my garden.
It's one of those like essential herbs, I think. But it has that rich history of how, you know, you wonder if the spirit of the plant was like, hey, come over here and eat me, because you're not supposed to be here, and we're going to show you what we're all about, you know.
Yes, I like to think that, absolutely. And especially like with Datura, because it's such a beautiful plant, like the flowers are so beautiful. But I do often wonder who looks at the seed pod and tries to eat
that. Because, yeah, I mean, that's pretty, you know, menacing.
It's spiky. And then when you open it, it's not a fleshy kind of fruit. It's just full of tiny brown seeds.
Yeah, yeah. But there's a reason, you know, it's called thorn apple.
Yes, it doesn't look like you might want to try it unless you're
right now.
So maybe there is an element of that.
Maybe, I wonder, there. I wonder how much, like, how much intelligence is there.
Yes, I like that.
So what are your favorite plant allies to work with, and how do you work with them?
In lots of different ways. So one of the things that I like to do is grow them, obviously. And I think by growing things, now I know some people say, oh, I'm not naturally a green thumb, but there's ways around that. You can buy like little young plug plants if you're kind of daunted about growing things from seed, because I think just the act of taking care of something and watching it grow, it automatically builds your interest in it, and you begin to see it for more than what it is, because you're taking care of it. You have a vested interest in it. And I think for many people, that can be the beginning of working with plants, even if it's just in a sense you want to kind of be a little bit more hands-on in your own magical practice. And I don't know, there's something very satisfying about taking care of a plant and watching it grow. So I often say to people, don't overlook those mundane aspects, because we want to delve straight into all of what we think is the good stuff. But that we learn a lot from this mundane knowing. And sometimes it's just a subtle kind of, a kind of knowing that you get from looking after and caring for something. You know, even when it fails, there's lessons to be learned, you know. I think that that's really important, just kind of trying and just having fun with it. Like, don't be so super serious all the time. Just have some fun. Get to know. Go out for a walk. Rediscover like where you live. There's so much people can do to begin to work with plant spirits. So I always think that if you kind of base it on your interest, what you're interested in, because then you're going to be more likely to stick to it. So if you like going walking, for instance, you might kind of stick to a route. But I always think it's nice to stick to a route for a kind of year, so you can begin to see the changes of the land throughout the year. Or even if that seems like such a big commitment, even for a week, go out in the morning one day, in the evening the next, maybe afternoon the next. And you just get to kind of experience the different qualities of the land, that same space at different times. I think it's quite surprising how much you learn from that one space just by observing it at different times. There's so much you can do.
Very true. Yeah.
Are you enjoying the show? If you are, we'd really appreciate a 5-star review. It helps us to reach more listeners like you and to keep doing the Magic Kitchen podcast. Thank you.
So, thank you very much for being here with us. Can you tell our listeners how they can find you, how they can connect with you?
Yes. So you can find me on most social media like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. It's Emma Catherine Wild Witch. EmmaCatherineWildWitchcraft.com. Yeah, find me at all those places.
Yeah, awesome.
Merry meet.
Merry part.
And merry meet again. Thank you for joining us on the Magic Kitchen podcast. Please visit my website, LeandraWitchwood.com, for news, information, and more episodes.
I'm Elise Wells, and I can be found at Seeking Numina on YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook, and SeekingNumina.com. That's Seeking, N-U-M-I-N-A.